Welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. Take a look behind the curtain of professional hacking and hear compelling discussions with guests from diverse backgrounds who share a common curiosity and passion for challenges and their job. And now, here's your host, offensive security professional, educator, mentor, and author, Philip Wiley.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Philip Wiley Show. I'm excited to be have joining me today, Nick and Norman from Flare. They've got an interesting product and interesting stories, so I look forward to them sharing and then learning more about their origin stories. So welcome to the show, guys.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to be here, Phil. Thanks.
Good to have you. It's been pretty impressed with your product. I mean, one of the things that's amazing about the what you provide in your product is just the effort it takes to try to manually collect that same information, and just the need for that type of information. Is as a pen tester, one of the things we really had to rely on is leaked data to get a foothold into organizations, either leverage that or phishing email, some kind of social engineering. And so having that information is valuable for a pen tester, but it's also, if it gets in the wrong hands, that's kind of scary stuff and could be used to exploit companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see our customers using it a lot for reconnaissance, right? So red teamers, et cetera. And then obviously organizations that are looking to protect themselves also understand what's out there, what's exposed.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, using some of the tools out there like Shodan and stuff, it's so limited and you really have to understand the product pretty well to get decent information out of it. And it's not really, you know, enterprise grade information that you're getting out of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's part of the origin story for both Fortrace and Flare, is a red teamers sort of desperate for a more adversarially focused view of your external footprint. Whereas, like, especially at the time when both of us were starting out, a lot of the products had a very sort of risk quantifying focus on your missing headers from exposed vanity domains, which is important for risk programs, but not as much something operationally relevant to the SOC, to actual, you know, operational level security ops. So that's part of why and how we both came about, which we'll get into.
So speaking of, why don't we kind of kick things off with you guys sharing your origin story and then the origin story of Flare. So Norman, why don't you go first?
Yeah, absolutely. So Phil, I always feel like I'm dating myself here when we talk about the origin story. I know one of your previous guests joked with the same joke that I like to say a lot is, you know, I've been in this space since before we called it cybersecurity. Really, frankly, started out on the systems and software side, you know, entrepreneurial, even going back to high school and college. And then, you know, there weren't programs at the time for computer science. Security in general was not even fair to call it an afterthought. I mean, we were working with technology that was pretty bleeding edge at the time, and just getting the tech to work was typically the goal. And security was occasionally thought of. So we're going back to the late 90s, early 2000s when I got started in this space and really started on the defensive side of it, really system configuration, hardening, best practices, mostly on web-facing systems. And then as my career evolved, I was managing teams that was moving more into the offensive security side, so doing pen testing, internal pens, external, et cetera, around that, and helping organizations understand what their exposures were. And interestingly enough, early days, and I think Nick will probably agree, there was a lot of education of just the difference between like a vulnerability assessment and a pen test, and frankly, even where one was appropriate or an organization didn't even necessarily have the maturity, if you will, for, you know, where a pen test was appropriate, right? So you still haven't finished, you know, implementing best practices, et cetera. And, you know, so there were other engagements with customers that were probably better for them. So that continued to evolve for me. And in the mid 2000s, founded a company called Prevalent Information Security Consultancy, did a lot of, work on the defensive security side, some of the offensive security side, and then started to do a lot to help organizations kind of report on their security posture. And then, we pivoted a little bit and actually developed the first dedicated, SaaS platform for third party or vendor risk assessment, at Prevalent. And that's really where I had been focusing for the last 10 plus years is what I call the external exposure side of that. So had an opportunity to have an exit with Prevalent, sold that back in late 2016. And then from there, moved on to a really interesting company called Delve Labs. And Delve was focusing on vulnerability prioritization, right? So we talk a lot about prioritization of vulnerabilities and having tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of them, and figure out which ones to focus the resources on to remediate, et cetera. And so built a really nice prioritization engine using machine learning and other forms of AI to do that. And then that that company was actually acquired by SecureWorks. And it's how I got the introduction here to Flare. Again, you know, consistency now through external exposure management from vendor risk to vulnerabilities and to now what we're doing with dark and clear web monitoring, and really enjoying what we're doing here. And that's actually to some extent what brought Nick and I together as well.
So that makes me next for my hacker origin story. I'll say Norm is a lot more impressive than mine. I came in, originally got into programming in high school. I was on our high school's programming team, not much of a sports guy, definitely more on the tech side. But that was my first like foray into Linux distros that existed back in the like mid 20 teens, which at the time Backtrack was very popular, which would eventually evolve into Kali. I got into that and programming in general, mostly like object oriented programming languages in high school, and went into the business school in college. College for me was Penn State University. We are, for any listeners who are also Penn Staters. I went into the business school originally and really kind of profoundly detested it. I was not quite as engaged by the content as I was with the tech stuff I was doing in high school. But to me, that was a hobby. That was something I did for fun. That was something I did after hours when the work was done, is I was writing scripts to automate things in my life, or working on some of the competitions that we were involved in high school. And that evolves into, I go to my guidance counselor at Penn State and I said, what else is out there? I don't think the business school is a good fit for me. And my guidance counselor at the time was like, or academic advisor was like, you really shouldn't switch out of the business school. That's a terrible idea. It is incredibly well connected. No one does that. But she gave me a pamphlet with a list of majors, and I scrolled through it, and I saw what was called security and risk analysis, SRA, which was like a crossover major. There was a cybersecurity specialization within it, but really it was like an IST, IT major, mostly focused on intelligence. So a lot of the professors were ex military intelligence people. So it sounded like a really cool program. Again, it was the kind of stuff I was passionate about, very much outside of traditional work content. So I went against the advice of my guidance counselor, switched into that program, which at the time was very small. There was not a lot of literature about it. But I took a bet and I absolutely loved it. I loved all the remaining 3 years in that program, and went into consulting after college, where I was mostly working on, at first, detection engineering, logging architecture, which got me exposed to the sort of eventually projects related to kind of reconciling the external with the internal. We've got such a wide variety of logs and devices and content pumping into our internal logging systems. Can we use this to reconcile what's in our CMDB? What do we know we have? What do we know is reporting of what we have? And what do we not know is public that's maybe not supposed to be? Trying to reconcile that from a logging perspective, which ends up being different than what I do at Fortrace. But I end up getting involved in a lot of projects spanning a pretty wide variety of categories. EDR, which has a strong marriage to SIM and logs. DLP, CASB, UEBA, a lot of the early SOAR, SOAR connections, which I really enjoyed and got me a lot more exposure in reconnaissance. So I was doing like at times vendor selection for clients, and I got exposed to the space of what was kind of early to mid ASM, which is attack surface management. I used a lot of the tools in that space on behalf of customers. I helped with tuning exercises. And I understood their fit, but I thought maybe there's a marriage we can have between these tools and our red team operations to make them a little more efficient, bolster the services, make them faster, make them better for red teamers by doing a lot of the reconnaissance up front and doing it continuously instead of point in time. And I wasn't particularly satisfied with the existing cohort of solutions from a red teamer's perspective. I think what was missing from the narrative with ASM at the time was data. There was really a strong emphasis on assets and external vulnerabilities, which are undeniably very important. But we were looking for things like exposed buckets, leaking code, collaboration suites where someone had accidentally over-permissed something. And that was something we were doing very much by hand and having a lot of success with. So that was the genesis for Fortrace. Was I wanted something that not only looked at your external exposure surface, but also was like, okay, so we found a server in the wild. What's on it? Not only what CVEs are on it, but what's the content on it? Is there something, is there a reason this server's exposed that is not intentional, that might have something, corporate resource, intellectual property, database backups that are facing the public that shouldn't be? So I'll stop there at risk of making a short story very long, but that's my origin and sort of Fortrace's origin also.
Nick, I feel like I need to one up you here a little bit because you mentioned installing Linux, and I was thinking back to when I first installed Linux, and ironically, it was from a floppy disk. So I'm going to imagine you had a different experience.
Nope, mine was on a USB.
Okay,
I was around in the USB days.
Phil, I think we probably all remember getting those magazines, different distros with CDs, Saran wrap to them, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. That's kind of how I got started in Linux. I went to I think it was like a Half Price Books or something like here in Dallas. And they had like this 6 or 7 set CD of all these different distros. And I ended up picking Red Hat, but that's kind of how I got exposed to it. Yeah. So why don't we kind of delve into the Flare origin story?
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's funny, Nick provided a little bit of an overview about what led him to founding of Fortrace. And ironically, it's a very similar, and we're going to talk about this merger of Fortrace and Flare in a few moments, but it's ironically a very similar story to to Flare. And so specifically, our founders here at Flare came from red teaming backgrounds or working in large financial institutions, and we're looking to accomplish a couple of things. Some of them Nick touched on, but fundamentally is how do I take the intuition of a red teamer and enable it for anyone who's using a platform in a very simple manner? And so imagine, sometimes we use the analogy of like a Google or global or universal search for the clear and the dark web. And so Flare was founded really to help all organizations understand what their external exposure was. Similarly to Fortrace, we also focus much more on what's my data that's exposed, more so than this one's a vulnerability or the things you typically see in the ASM space. And so we founded it to do that. And then the thing that I think that attracted me to join the company was really the brilliance of the team to do it at scale. So if you think about, we started out doing dark web monitoring. And one of the things is a kind of our claim to fame going back to 2017 is for all the major cybersecurity related dark web forums, financial crime, et cetera, we do daily archives of those. And the team did a really amazing job at building a distributed and scalable system to do that collection and archiving. And it allows us to have this amazing repository of data. And then fast forward a little bit to 2019, we started to see a lot of the threat actor activity moving from the dark web to different clear web forums, et cetera. We're now seeing it obviously on Telegram as well. But, imagine having a single place to do a search. You don't even necessarily have to understand how Tor works, how Telegram works, how an API for this particular paste bin works or this Bitbucket or et cetera, and being able to just run a universal search and understand where your organization is exposed and who's talking about you, et cetera. And so Flare was really founded to help organizations do that, kind of automate that intuition of the red teamer and give it to anyone at scale. And so you can take people who are just beginning in this space, provide them a platform where they can be very effective, they can triage, understand risks of it. And so that's really what led us to found Flare. And then I'll maybe let Nick kind of dovetail that into the similarities of Fortrace, and then we can talk about the acquisition.
Yeah, I think the origin stories have some pretty striking similarities in that they were born out of a very data-driven approach to understanding exposure, the data being contextual. Contextualize the exposure of assets with data to make sense of, again, what is exposed. Just because things are exposed, a lot of things are exposed intentionally or may look unintentional but are actually relatively benign. So the context added by what is this data? Is it an access key to some AWS resource? Is it a Microsoft SAS token with way too much permission? Is it a username and password? Like the context behind what's hosted on the resource and what is the data wherever you found it, again, whether it's on like a Git site, a Clearweb forum, or in a Steeler log being traded on Telegram is extremely important, which is why we were so excited about the acquisition, because the thesis is very, very similar. And the emphasis on data is definitely what unites our vision.
So how, I mean, they're similar products. So this collaboration or acquisition, so how do you see that improving what, you know, existing Flare customers are seeing today?
Yeah, maybe I'll take the first shot at sure. that one. So if you piggyback on what we talked about before in terms of this broad global collection that we have, and really allowing people to find kind of gold nuggets, if you will, scattered throughout the internet, and being able to leverage off of that, provide alerting, prioritization of that, et cetera, there was a couple, given the similarities, there were obviously also some differences in the approach. And there were a couple that were really attractive to me, and it was funny. Do you remember the first time we met?
Yep, in Vegas.
Yeah, so we were at Black Hat together, and we were at a whiskey tasting party, I guess, for lack of a better word. And somebody that I was there with said, hey, you need to meet this guy, Nick. It sounds like you guys are doing something similar. And so Nick and I, we had a relatively quick chat because I was running late for a red-eye flight, but it kind of clicked and made a lot of sense. And so when I had a chance to follow up with Nick and the team afterward and started to look at what they were doing, Phil, the thing that was interesting is in addition to what – so Flare was we're one of the few, I think, primary collectors of dark web and other data, clear web, et cetera. That's one of the things we pride ourselves in, be able to really do that at scale. Fortrace took a slightly different approach because they started a little bit later where they were consuming other people's data. But given that, as if you will, kind of a time advantage, one of the things that Nick and the team did that was really interesting is the way in which they drilled into that data. So they would do what I refer to as entity extraction. So they would look within the data. They would determine that data is associated with which entity. So you might, for example, have a GitHub post that maybe is referencing an API key, which is what the customer is looking for. But in addition to that, maybe we have internal system configuration. So Fortrace would start to extract that out and would build systems or people identities and things of that nature. And they've done a really effective job at doing that. And then the meta analysis, and I'll let Nick kind of go into the detail of files, is something that Fortrace does that's really interesting. So we want to take these capabilities and make them available to our customers here at Flare as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think part of what is extremely cool about Flare and what I've always admired about it is also what they do with files, which is we had a slightly different approach at Fortrace, which I think will be an undeniably cool value add and something that is exciting for red teamers and appreciators of data, which is our focus on metadata. So not only traditional sources of metadata from like enumerating ownership maybe of a bucket, or enumerating ownership of any cloud resource, like if a SharePoint directory is exposed by a company, who is the company that owns that, and what's inside of it, but also the metadata of files has always been to me a relatively well understood but also untapped, not necessarily untapped by adversaries, but untapped from a monitoring perspective, source of really interesting data. So some examples are like if we look in the EXIF, the metadata of a file, which if you use an EXIF extractor, you can see what tool made this file. What was the version of what DLL that was a part of the, when someone clicked export as PDF, what did that produce? Which gives you a lot of, and author fields, the username, who made this file, which is at times a first and last name, at times an email address, and even juicier at times, an actual federated identity username, where like you can start password spraying against a public portal because you know the usernaming conventions that you got from the metadata of a file that was intentionally released. Like safely, intentionally reviewed for, you know, accidentally leaking anything within its contents, but unbeknownst to the publisher, the metadata itself within the file contained revealing information. So that's one of many examples of our sort of extraction of data from one source to the next, because we can take that username and see if it's ever been found in code. See if it's present on the dark web in any flavor, where maybe there's no mention of the company at all, but that username in the username convention is found somewhere in discussion by an access broker, which is a data set that Flare has that is really awesome, in the content of Stealer logs. So I think taking what Norman described properly as entity extraction and marrying that with the data set is going to be really cool. And I'm excited for what we continue to build there.
Yeah, and I think the key to that, as you said, is really that contextualization. So imagine being able to build a full contextual picture of an organization, right? So if you're a red teamer on a pen test engagement, being able to do that as part of that, a lot of our partners today will use that data to get initial access, right, into an organization. But if you're an organization, if you're working within your organization, you want to understand where all your exposures are, regardless of the technology used, who the actor was, whether it was a threat actor, an employee, or a third party, you get that complete picture, you know, through this merger.
So yeah, it's kind of nice because you think about the effort it goes in to do all this stuff manually, the time it takes, and it's just kind of nice to have, you know, a resource like this that's continually testing, you know, any kind of information leakage and the attack surface.
One of the things that we pride ourselves is, as you said, is like the coverage, but even like the instantaneous feedback a customer gets. And we'll have, like, we've had some of our partners say that in terms of the reconnaissance work, they can cut that down by 95% because it's this vast repository of data.
Yeah, it's really important to be able to automate things because just, you know, we can discuss or, you know, argue the skills gap, whether it's real or not, but a lot of companies don't have the staff they need to do the work. So you need the tools to be able to scale those security professionals so you can do more, you know, in less time with the staff that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe sometime it'd be interesting to have that debate. We were actually just having about an hour ago here. And, you know, I think my one commentary on this one would be, I think everyone looks for the easy button, like we order our coffee on Starbucks and we go pick it up. Like, I think enterprises expect the same thing. And I think where enterprises are starting to realize they need to innovate more, and I think, you know, perhaps even appropriate for the audience, is making an investment in those people who are just coming into this space and help train them and educate them and use the resources that are available, you know, so they're, you know, there's a little bit of a real skills gap, and then there's a perceived skills gap, because I think classically, if you went into a specialized trade, the organization would train you. And I think we've lost that perception recently. And I think cybersecurity is a really interesting one where enterprises need to be willing to sign up and really train people that are coming into a new field.
Yeah. Every place I've worked has had that philosophy. Yeah. I've been really lucky in that regard, and it has paid dividends. Definitely investing in early talent has undeniably paid itself back.
Yeah. So let's kind of discuss the acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely. So we 2 weeks ago, we publicly announced the acquisition of Fortrace by Flare. It's something the team's really excited about. We talked a little bit about the philosophies of the company coming together. We feel like we're in a really interesting, the threat exposure management space. There's a lot of consolidation going on, if you will. There's a lot of excitement in the space, whether that's adoption by customers who are really, I think, gaining a full appreciation for understanding where external exposure exists. And then finally, like, I think the consolidation is really important. You know, classically, we have a tendency to silo things, and we would look at vulnerability management, I think, was really the first thing where organizations would start looking at external risk. I talked a little bit before about vendor or supplier risk management. We have attack surface management. We have digital risk protection. We have cyber threat intelligence. You know, we have the acronym SOUP there. But at the end of the day, if you're a CISO or if you're responsible for cyber in an organization, you look at your external risk in a singular lens, right? And so we use this as an opportunity to really bring about some additional consolidation. I think in one of the things we publicly announced, it's the first acquisition of another 10 company in the space. It's something that we feel is really the proper categorization of all those technologies that I just mentioned. And what we want to do is we still understand that enterprises, for the most part, want best of breed. But we think when it comes to external risk, it makes a lot of sense to centralize those. I don't know what you think, Nick.
No, I agree. I think it's been this niche corner of the industry has struggled kind of uniquely with almost acronym fatigue, where there's an overwhelming amount of categories that are extrapolating different but very, very similar insights off of extremely similar data sets. So TEM makes a lot of sense. And the marriage of Fortrace to Flare in the TEM category, which, like Norman said, is the first of its kind in the TEM space, which, by the way, for the audience, TEM or CTEM is Continuous Threat Exposure Management, which is regrettably another new acronym, but is one that I feel like, especially from the practitioner's lens, finally makes sense. All of the different ways to extract context for the different use cases on the same data that DRP or EASM or more like external looking vulnerability management has scoped in the past makes a lot more sense under CTEM or TEM, as it's often called as a category.
So yeah, for some of our listeners or viewers that may not be familiar with this space, could you share some of the use cases?
I'll let you go first for Flare, and then I'll piggyback.
Yeah. So, you know, as we've mentioned, I think we've alluded to some of them. So the first one is for every cybersecurity solution, tool, or need that an organization has, the one thing that's always fundamentally lacking is just a good up-to-date inventory. We've talked about CMDBs and things of that nature in the past. So if you want to look at it very simply, the first one is just understanding what an enterprise is, if you will, what their footprint looks like. So those are not just what's necessarily exposed, as Nick said, what should be exposed. So we're talking about exposed services, systems, sites, things of that nature that are necessarily out in the public for whatever reason they're out there. And so that ability in TEM to build this dynamic inventory, something that's changing by the day or even by the minute sometimes, especially with things like dynamic hosts. You have third parties that are standing up services for you. Say, for example, if you're in pharmaceuticals, you may have hundreds of brand websites that are changing all the time. Some of them are quote unquote authorized. Some of them are not. Some of them have vulnerabilities or other types of exposure, maybe leaking sensitive information. So the first piece of that is to build an inventory. And then with that inventory and knowledge to then start to build some context and say, okay, where are the exposures? Which of these systems, for example, are vulnerable? You know, where may or maybe they have services that are exposed that you wouldn't want to see exposed. So again, we're still dancing around inventory as well as asset identification or attack surface management, so to speak. And then we still continuously look at other things like SSL certificates. So you start to build up this whole inventory of systems and services that are out there, and then next extend it to data. And as we had said, that's really the area that we really focused on, because we said, okay, given all of that exists, like what's the impact of that? Where do I have data that's exposed? And how did that data get exposed? We know a lot of breaches are still, the majority of data breaches still come from internal users or third parties or human behavior, people making mistakes. So we want to be able to identify and detect those. And so we continuously build this foundation that paints a picture of what the organization's exposure looks like. Maybe I'll leave the rest of it to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really fun use cases within the data to talk about that I think have been uniquely striking recently, primarily Steeler logs. If the audience is familiar, Steeler logs are overwhelmingly stolen from stored credentials in like browser sessions, or cookies from browser sessions, which are like storing the session data, where in some cases an adversary who takes that cookie is able to just resume the session as you, the user, which is a common and increasingly terrifying way for them to bypass multi-factor authentication, because the session is already authenticated. So something we see a lot of that's unique to the use case of looking for organizational content in Steeler logs is a lot of this is not coming from necessarily corporate resources. It is often a corporate device that got hit with an info stealer, which has taken all the credentials and active sessions and then sold them. Often in Telegram groups is a very, very common source of selling, which we work really hard on our coverage of Telegram at Flare. But also a home computer where if you've logged in over SSO from your home device ever, and logged into a couple of corporate resources, SharePoint, ADP, Salesforce from home, and stored those credentials in your browser. And then your kid is playing Fortnite and wants more, whatever the currency is, V-Bucks, and downloads some sketchy add-on that they click and actually has an info stealer in it, which is relatively common. Your corporate credentials on your personal device are now present additionally in the stealer log, which is uniquely insightful for adversaries not only to get active creds from non-corporate devices, which are very well, usually a lot more well protected in some kind of depth by a variety of controls, whereas a home device is often not, but they can enumerate things from the stealer logs, like what is this company using? What are the specific apps and the tenant ID to follow a URL to get to their tenant of this app, which is present in stealer logs in addition to session cookies. So that's been one that's been a serious topic lately, because the sort of endemic rise of stealer logs in the dark web community has been pretty notable over the last year or two. So that's, again, at risk of going too long on other exciting data use cases, I think that's one that that I'm particularly interested in and that we really do a great job on.
Yeah, Nick, if I could maybe share another story that's really interesting related to stealer logs that I think will be relevant to the group. A lot of times we talk about organizations monitoring themselves, and we had mentioned third parties before. A lot of times organizations don't have visibility when their third party has an exposure that's exposing their data. Sometimes the third party doesn't know about it. Sometimes the third party hasn't had an opportunity to notify their customer. But in relation to stealer logs, I came across an interesting one about 2 weeks ago. And I'll keep the specifics generic, if you will. The stealer log is malware is really interesting because it exfiltrates a lot of data, but it also does things like, it takes, dumps of certain directories on a system, let's assume a Windows system for now. And this particular stealer log also takes a screenshot of the person's desktop when the malware gets detonated. And it was really interesting because there was a folder on this person's desktop. So you see the person's full desktop as a screenshot. You see a folder open and the name of it was crackedphotoshop.exe. So clearly where the malware came from.
Yep.
But the thing that makes it really interesting is this individual, you can fairly quickly assume if you look at all the credentials that were on this, this individual worked as a consultant for an organization that created an emergency notification system for enterprises, municipalities, et cetera. They had hundreds of stored admin credentials for each of their customer portal systems. And so if you think about that, like you have hundreds of organizations exposed from a single InfoStealer malware for critical systems.
Yep.
So it's kind of a fun story to tell, but it's also realistic about the true nature and risk and even the breadth of InfoStealer malware.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So thanks for sharing that. So we're getting down towards the end of the episode, is there anything you'd like to share before we close it out?
I'll let you start it off, Nick.
Nothing specific. I'm really happy to have been on the show. It's always fun to share my origin story. It was great to meet you, Philip. I'll say that I'm really excited about the direction of Flare, especially with the acquisition of Fortrace. I think the vision for the CTEM space is really, really powerful. And I think this was an undeniably powerful step in that direction with the idea of unifying CTEM into a space that eventually, you know, collates all of the different acronyms and use cases on top of the data into one unified approach that makes a lot of sense and makes more operational sense.
Yeah,
and Norman, then, any final notes?
Yeah, so I'm going to take a little, thank you for that, Nick. I'm going to take a little bit of a different, like, we're really excited about the merger between Fortrace and Flare for a couple reasons. One, we've talked about it brings together very like mindsets. I think fundamentally at the root of both organizations, now one organization, is this need to really want to help our customers and our enterprises reduce their risk, become more secure. We want to enable security practitioners. And at the end of the day, the thing that I love about the cybersecurity community is it is a true community of people that want to do the right thing. They want to help each other out. They want to help other organizations out. And so we appreciate the opportunity to be here with you, Phil. Thank you for everything that you do in terms of promoting cybersecurity, help educating people, bringing other experts together and really get a chance to talk about that. I think that, you know, we've got a tough mission ahead of us, right, to protect ourselves and our organizations. And it's just great that we'd have so many like-minded people coming together. And it's great to be working with Nick and the team now as well.
Yeah, it was great having you guys on the show. Great to meet you and learning more about the products. And I think it's a win-win for future customers and existing customers. Now you've had two awesome products, and now you've got, you're going to have a single, even better product. And as far as organization, having like, all the developers and all the minds that were helped build this product collaborating together. So I really look forward to seeing what you all do in the future.
Yeah. The best of both worlds.
Well, thanks for joining me, gentlemen. It was great to meet you.
It was awesome. Thanks very much, Phil.
You as well. Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to The Philip Wiley Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, to learn more about Philip, go to thehackermaker.com and connect with him on LinkedIn and Twitter at Philip Wiley. Until next time.